Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. Today I'll be talking with Bay Area native actor Susan Grodner, who is part of the touring production of Beautiful, the Carole King musical, currently at the Golden Gate Theater through June 9th. I'll also talk with German-born conductor Christian Reif, resident conductor of the San Francisco Symphony, and also music director of the San Francisco Symphony Youth Orchestra, which he takes on a European tour this summer. Before he does that, though, you'll enjoy him doing Carmina Burana with the Symphony Chorus and Orchestra this coming Tuesday evening. I'll talk with composer Jacob Garchik, who wrote several arrangements, as well as the world premiere piece that will conclude Kronos Festival 2019, the fifth annual such festival, a three-day music festival this weekend at the SF Jazz Center. Jacob's new work explores the musical legacy of folk icon and activist Pete Seeger, who will have turned 100 in May. Also, from Pocket Opera, the Bay Area's premier chamber opera company, will meet with general manager Chung-Wai Sung and the newly appointed artistic director Nicholas Garcia to talk about their production of Offenbach's fantastical opera Tales of Hoffman over these next three Sundays in Berkeley, San Francisco, and Palo Alto. Stay with us. To start things off, how about some information about the Kronos Festival? San Francisco's Kronos Quartet, Kronos Performing Arts Association, presents Kronos Festival 2019, their fifth annual three-day music festival. This year, the festival highlights the voices of singers, storytellers, and activists over three evening concerts, a Saturday morning family concert, and Kronos Labs, free public events that are new this year. During the festival, a wide range of artists will join Kronos on stage, and highlighting their legacy of mentorship, students from the Ruth Asawa San Francisco School of the Arts once again take center stage during the festival. Valerie Saint-Agathe, artistic director of the San Francisco Girls Chorus and frequent collaborator, will be Kronos Festival 2019's artist in residence. I'm joined in studio by multi-instrumentalist and composer Jacob Garchik, who has been intimately involved with Kronos for many years. He's lived in New York now, but born here in San Francisco, and is at home in a wide variety of styles and musical roles, a vital part of the downtown and Brooklyn music scene, playing trombone in groups ranging from jazz to contemporary classical to Balkan brass bands, and he also co-leads Brooklyn's premier Mexican brass band, the Banda de los Muertos. Since 2006, Jacob has contributed nearly 100 arrangements and transcriptions for Kronos Quartet of music from all over the world, including the score for Kronos for the 2013 documentary, The Campaign. In 2017, he composed the score for The Green Fog, a found footage remake of Vertigo, directed by Guy Madden, Evan Johnson, and Galen Johnson, which Kronos performed live at the San Francisco Film Festival. He's also created arrangements for Annie-Sophie von Otter, Angelique Kidjo, Laurie Anderson, Katie Lang, Natalie Merchant, among many others. Jacob, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Happy to have you. And I need to give a shout-out to your mom, Leah. She's very happy that you're a guest today.
Mom.
There you go. I got to say hi to Mom. So let's talk a bit about the festival in general first, and then your role as arranger and some of the things. It's a three-day festival, fifth as such. What's happening on day one?
Oh, they're going to play a bunch of my stuff.
Great.
The opening night, there's a piece that I worked on by Rhiannon Giddens. It's called At the Purchaser's Option, and it's going to be played by a student string quartet from School of the Arts,
which is
part of this amazing project that Kronos has done called 50 for the Future, where they commissioned 50 composers of all different types of music and to write pieces for string quartet, and all of that music is available on their website for free and can be performed by anyone anywhere in the world, even by people on other instruments, as I'll talk about later too.
Sure.
Which I think is an amazing project. I got to participate in a few of those working as an arranger with these composers. And just the fact that students can have access to brand new music by cutting edge composers for free and then study the way that Kronos did them. That's an amazing project.
Fantastic. This opening night festival is tonight at 7:30 at the SF Jazz Center. Among the program, Valerie Saint-Agat with guests Rebecca Solnit, Mecklet, Michael Wayne Turner III, Lee Knight, and the San Francisco Girls Chorus, as well as a special appearance by the Dragon String Quartet, you just mentioned, I believe. You're also having a piece a piece called by Fatima Al-Zaliyeh?
Yes, this is a piece. We got it from a compilation of music from Yemen. And the original is just an amazing piece for a vocalist and a guy playing a copper tray.
Okay.
Which I heard the recording and it was this fascinating sound, and I had to look up YouTube videos to see what it actually is. But it is actually like a copper serving tray.
How big is it?
It's about the size of you'd have it in a centerpiece and the table with some fruit on it.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And he balances it on his fingertips and plays it from underneath.
Wow.
So it has an amazing sound. And so I created this arrangement for string quartet. I don't think we're going to have a copper serving tray, but I think the members of Kronos are going to play metallic bowls or something like that.
Mm, interesting. Also, Mizzy Mazzoli has a world premiere being done called Enthusiasm Strategies. Also, spoken word is a very important part of this opening night concert. Voices of a People's History, which will be introduced by Valerie Saint-Agat. Howard Zinn's The Problem is Civil Disobedience, that'll be read by Rebecca Solnit. Marge Piercy's The Low Road. Pete Seeger's Step by Step, which is actually taken from the American Miners Association Constitution. That'll be read by Lee Knight, as well as excerpts from I've Been to the Mountaintop by Martin Luther King Jr. Should be a fascinating evening.
Yep, jam-packed. A lot of stuff.
And it takes us to Saturday's concert at 7:30, or Friday's, actually. Yeah, Friday the 31st. It's hard to believe it's already the end of May. Also 7:30 at the SF Jazz Center. Program 2 will all have guests Coco Rosie, Jarek Bischoff, Sam Green, and once again the San Francisco Girls Chorus and the Dragon Saxophone Quintet.
Yeah, so that's also kids from School of the Arts are going to be playing one of my arrangements. And like I was saying, it's originally for string quartet, but here the sax players are doing an amazing job playing this piece. It's originally from Mali. The composer is a balafon player. So the music, it underwent a few transformations, and it's really exciting to hear the students play it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting work that Kronos is going to be working on. They're going to have some works that they're still to be announced on this program, I understand. But along with Bianca Cassidy and Sierra Cassidy, who there'll be voices, percussion, toys, and drum machine featuring members of San Francisco Girls Chorus Premier Ensemble conducted by Valerie Saint-Agat. Were you involved at all in the programming, or are they just using some of your arrangements for this?
I wasn't involved in the programming, but yes, creating lots of arrangements. Some of these are things that I had in the works for the last year or two, and some of them are brand new, which I've only put together specifically for the concert. Like the Pete Seeger stuff, this is the first time we're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about that piece.
So I wrote an original piece. I call it Storyteller. I worked with a guy named Todd Harvey, who's from the Library of Congress, who has this incredible archive of from the entire Seeger family, not just Pete Seeger, but his father, Charles Seeger, his stepmother, Ruth Crawford Seeger, who was an amazing avant-garde composer, and all of his siblings, and they collected thousands of hours of material, including concerts, interviews, radio shows, films. Pete Seeger and his wife would travel all around the world and film all kinds of different music back in the 50s. So I didn't have time to listen to every single hour of all that stuff, but I picked a bunch of things that interested me, and I made sort of a collage piece for Kronos using the voice of Pete Seeger, talking, singing, telling stories, acting, and also arranged his banjo playing And you also get to hear him play guitar and sing, and Kronos sort of laid over that. So it's like a sort of a collage. I think David likes the word mosaic. This is David Harrington from Kronos. It's a combination of all these different things to give you a little flavor of what Pete Seeger was about.
Nice. And one of your arrangements is also going to be on for the family concert on Saturday, June 1st at 11 a.m.
Yeah, they're going to do a version of Garbage, a wonderful
I know that
piece,
tune.
You
Pete
know,
Seeger
tune. Garbage. Yeah, Lee Knight is going to be taking the role of Pete Seeger. I'm very excited about that. I'm hoping that my toddler gets to sing along and say Garbage. I think he'll be excited. But yeah, that concert should be a lot of fun. It's 11 a.m. on Saturday.
I'm just calling up Garbage now while you're on.
Garbage. It requires audience participation.
It does indeed. So that concert's called Around the World with Kronos, 11 a.m. on Saturday. Once again, the singers from the San Francisco Girls Chorus Bayview Chorus Program, as well as a special pre-show performance by the SF Girls Chorus School. A fascinating program. It really does go all around the world, including a couple of nice arrangements by my guest, Jacob Garchik, very much involved in the Kronos Quartet's fifth annual Festival 2019. Brings us to day three of the festival, which is going to be also Saturday at 7:30 in the evening at SF Jazz Center.
Yeah, so day three, they're going to be premiering my piece, and then many other guests are going to join with music of Pete Seeger. So sort of like a big tribute to him for his 100th birthday. Nice. And again, we're hoping that people sing along, which was, you know, Pete Seeger's specialty, getting the audience to sing along. So I'm hoping the Kronos is as welcoming as he would be.
Just to get people's ears around the Pete Seeger Garbage tune, let's hear a little bit of that, and then we'll talk more with Jacob Garchik about the festival.
Mr. Thompson calls the waiter, orders steak and baked potato. He leaves the bone and gristle, and he never eats the skin. The busboy comes and takes it, with a cough contaminates it, puts it in a can with coffee grounds and sardine tins. And the truck comes by on Friday and carts it all away. 1,000 trucks just like it are converging on the bay. Oh, garbage. We're filling up the seas with garbage. What will we do when there's no place left to put all the garbage? Mr. Thompson starts his Cadillac, winds it down the freeway track, leaving friends and neighbors in a hydrocarbon haze. Joined by lots of smaller cars, all sending gases to the stars, there to form a seething cloud that hangs for 30 days. And the sun licks down into it with an
Pete Seeger keeping us real with garbage. Some 30, 40 years ago this tune was written. Not much changes, I'm afraid. And thank you, Pete, for bringing it to our attention. You might even hear my guest Jacob Garchik's son sing along with garbage there on that performance. Several free events are involved in Kronos Festival 2019. Can you share some of the details about those?
Yes. I think last night there was a screening of some of Pete Seeger's films at the Exploratorium. And there's going to be a pre-show talk on Saturday night with Lucy Duran, who's a friend of mine, who's a fascinating professor specializing in music from Mali, which I highly encourage people to go check that out. And also Todd Harvey, who I worked with, who's from the Library of Congress, he's going to be talking about Pete Seeger's legacy and his archive. That's on Saturday at 5.
Also Saturday at 2 in the afternoon, Kronos Festival will be presenting Women Leaders of the Bayview as a free talk. It's a free talk and performance led by Valerie Santagaton, featuring Shelley Bradford Bell, Heidi Harden, Christopher Street, Lee Knight, and singers from the chorus, as the Bayview Chorus Program. That's at 2 p.m. KronosQuartet.org for all information about the festival. We earlier today on your call, we had some information about another major festival going on here in San Francisco, the International Festival of the Arts, and the problems they've been having with visas, which is really outrageous. And Kronos Festival is not immune to that either. One of the guests that was expected is not coming because of visa problems, and it's just a shame. You know anything further about that?
Yeah, Hawa Diabate is an amazing vocalist from Mali that I had the honor of working with Kronos. She's a member of a group called Trio de Cali, and we collaborated with them a few years ago and did an album that was thrilling to work on. And she's been on tour in the United States many times. She has a history of, she's gone all over the world. She's just an incredible musician and one of the most astounding singers from Mali. And something, you know, the rules changed at the last minute, and she wasn't able to get through all of the bureaucracy. And
it's becoming much and more of a bureaucracy that's more malevolent than anything else. It's really too bad.
These
people are just coming to share their works for a day or two or perhaps a week, and they're being needlessly denied visas to come to this country. It's too bad.
Yeah, very frustrating.
Great music ahead for the Kronos Quartet Festival, kronosquartet.org. Jacob, we're going to go out with something you arranged for Kronos called Green Smoke. What is that all about?
This is from it's music I composed for film score for the movie Green Fog, which was commissioned by the SF Film Festival. It's directed by Guy Madden, Evan Johnson, Galen Johnson, and sort of a tribute to Vertigo, but the music only superficially resembles Vertigo.
Several arrangements of Jacob's as part of the Kronos Festival. Once again, Kronos Festival, KronosQuartet.org for more information. Well, enjoy your visit with your mom. I'm sure she's going to enjoy spending some time with your her grandson.
Oh, yeah.
And do give my regards to Brooklyn when you get back there.
Okay.
Music of Jacob Garvik, arranged for the choir, Kronos Quartet. Garchik's arrangement for the string quartet called Green Smoke, the Kronos Quartet, kronosquartet.org for more information about this fantastic three-day festival, for the most part taking place at SF Jazz here in San Francisco. Still to come, I'll be talking with conductor Christian Reif about his work with the San Francisco Symphony as well as the San Francisco Youth Orchestra, which he's taking on a European tour. As well, we'll be talking about Beautiful, the Carol King musical at the Golden Gate Theater. Stay with us. Music from Offenbach and Tales of Hoffman to start this next segment. Now in its 42nd season, Pocket Opera, the Bay Area's premier chamber opera company, offers accessible, audience-friendly, fully staged and concert ensemble performances in often charming English versions by Donald Pippin, the company's founder and artistic director emeritus. They're presenting Jacques Offenbach's The Tales of Hoffman this Sunday at the Hillside Club in Berkeley, the following Sunday at the Legion of Honor here in San Francisco, and on Sunday, June 16th at 5 p.m. at the Oshman Family Jewish Community Center in Palo Alto. Here to talk about the production and what's happening at Pocket Opera in its new era is Nicholas Garcia. He's artistic director of the Pocket Opera, and an interesting coincidence, he began his career in the chorus of Tales of Hoffman some 20 years ago. Since then, he's gone on to perform many roles with companies throughout the Bay Area and beyond, and he's worked at Opera San Jose, Michigan Opera, and San Diego Opera, among others. And in 2017, he worked at the Royal Swedish Opera as associate director on their production of La Cenerentola. Very happy to be taking the position now of artistic director of Pocket Opera this season. Nicholas, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course, happy to have you. He's joined by Chung-Wai Sung, who brings decades of experience as an administrator and event planner to Pocket Opera, encompassing corporate, retail, artistic, and nonprofit sectors. He's also a gifted vocalist as well, and has sung with ensembles and companies in Australia and the U.S., including Capella SF, Volte, an artist's vocal ensemble locally. He's a longtime member of the San Francisco Symphony Chorus as well, and has appeared as soloist, including in productions of Boris Godunov, and as the bass soloist in Beethoven's Choral Fantasy, conducted by Kurt Mazur, which was also performed at the Ojai Festival. Chung-Wai, welcome back to you.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Nice to have you both here to talk about Pocket Opera and its new era. Let's talk about that first, Nicholas Garcia, about how things are changing at the opera.
Well, for the last 42 years, Donald Pippin himself has been the artistic director. And I remember when he hired me some 22 years ago to be in the chorus of Tales of Hoffman. And he's been a sort of one-man force of nature for a long time. He's 93 now.
Oh, my gosh.
At 93, has decided maybe it's time to slow down. So he has stepped aside and let me step up as artistic director. I was the associate artistic director for the last couple of years, sort of prepping for the job. And now I'm taking the reins. We have a whole new team in place, a new executive director, Jeffrey Jordan, and our wonderful new man of all work, general manager, Chung-Wai Sung, who really does more than I could begin to describe to help keep our company going. And we're really just trying to reach new audiences and show them that opera is not an exclusive art form, that it is a very accessible art form, that it speaks to everything that is human and meaningful in life. And it has really the most exquisite music that's ever been written across the board.
Of course. So. And nice to see that Donald Pippin, even at 94, is still involved in...
comes to every show and has his say on the season and the casting and everything.
What a tremendous library that he's built up over these years.
You have quite
a repertoire to choose
absolutely.
from.
Absolutely. I think we are the chamber opera company in the United States with the largest standing repertoire available. We have over any given season, we can pull from 90 different operas that he has translated into English. Mm-hmm. And for example, this season we did Smetana's The Two Widows, which everyone says, the Smetana's what? Smetana wrote The Bartered Bride, which is one of the most popular operas, but he has written many other wonderful works in the Czech repertoire. They're just not very accessible because most American companies won't do them. Because ours is in English, we performed it this year. It's, I think, our third or fourth time producing it over the last 40 years. And it was an enormous success because apparently there are Smetanophiles out there that really, they want to see their Smetana and they don't get a chance very often. And so... And people from the Czech community also came out. People who love this. We had a traditional folk ensemble doing dance with it. And so that's one of the things that makes Pocket Opera special. Not only do we do sort of larger hits like The Elixir of Love or Barber of Seville, which we'll be presenting this year, we do some very rare works like Two Widows and others.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Offenbach Tales of Hoffman is a massive work, so I'm wondering how has it been compacted for pocket opera?
Well, what's interesting is that we always say that had Offenbach and Donald Pippin been alive at the same time, they would have collaborated invariably, because Donald's particular affinity for translating Offenbach works into English is like none other. His gift for setting that music to the English language is unparalleled, and the translation is utterly charming. And the fun part of pocket opera, the challenging part and the fun part, is how can we get a grand opera pocket-sized.
Right.
And so it's like the tiny house phenomenon. You just have to see how much you can do with how little.
Eliminate some clutter.
Absolutely. Yes. And what you end up with is the music and the story and honest performances. And instead of being hundreds of feet away in a major opera house, you're 10 feet away. And you see the expression. You see the sweat on the forehead of the tenor. You see, you're right there going through the story with them. Some good costumes and some excellent music direction. And
in English.
And in English.
There you go.
So it's a very sort of lean, economical production, but it's a wonderful version that our audiences have been on board with for a long time. And,
right.
And we think the more people come to see it for the first time, they say, well, gosh, that was much more accessible than I thought it would be, much more sort of newbie friendly. It makes it very easy for someone to come into their first opera and be charmed.
Mm-hmm. That's Nicholas Garcia, artistic director, new artistic director of the Pocket Opera. He's been with the company for a long time. General Manager Chung Wai Sung, how do you see things moving forward now with Pocket Opera?
Well, what we're trying to do is to build on Donald's incredible and unique legacy. Pocket Opera is a San Francisco institution. Like so many other institutions, sometimes people forget that we're still here. We've encountered audience members who have now come to this season and said, I didn't know Pocket Opera was still going and going so well. So I would add one thing about performing, being a huge opera fan myself, to listen to my fellow singers sing in English, the understanding that one gets from singing the words in one's vernacular is irreplaceable.
The immediacy of it.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And so, as singers, we learn foreign languages and we transliterate and we understand what we're singing. But to sing in your own vernacular is something very special. And I think that comes across very well to the audiences, because it's a very satisfying experience and a very immediate sort of communication. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing we're trying to build on, is Donald's utterly unique and enduring legacy. And the fact that Donald's still with us and inspiring us and helping us to plan our current and future seasons and having a say is, an invaluable position to be in, to have your founder and guiding light still there helping you move it to the next generation.
It's an incredible resource of sort of institutional memory for the whole arts community of the Bay Area. I mean, he was playing at the clubs during the Beatnik era, playing piano there. I mean, so he knows San Francisco arts all the way back. And so for as long as possible to stay connected to that is so, so helpful and beautiful.
Mm, nice. This is not the end of your season. Barber of Seville is also a part of this season. And you just did a production recently of La Rondine as well.
Correct. Yeah, we did. Of all the Puccini operas, La Rondine sort of gets the short shrift. People think it's not as extraordinary as some of, La Boheme and Madame Butterfly.
Because nobody dies.
It's just a slice of sort of real life, a heartbreaking romance that is just lovely and charming. And the music is absolutely exquisite. And so we produced it this year, and it went exceedingly well. We also got wonderful reviews for that. And so now we go on to, Tales of Hoffman, and then we'll close out with a wonderful co-production with Cinnabar Theater of Barber of Seville, with some fabulous singers in that as well. So, people should turn out and come see what Figaro sounds like in English.
Which translates to
Figaro.
So what is the audition process if people wanted to become more involved with Pocket Opera?
We audition in September. So if they reach out to Pocket Opera, info@pocketopera.org, and in August and want to set up an audition slot, we love hearing new singers. Donald sits in on every audition with us still to this day. And we love casting exciting new singers. We have, what's great about Pocket Opera is there are people that have had major careers that are slowing down and just want to do the occasional local gig. And then we have students fresh out of conservatory doing their first gig in the chorus together. And it's really one of those places where you get to try on a larger role for the first time. You know, the people who sang the lead roles in our Rondinet probably wouldn't be singing the lead roles in Rondinet at San Francisco Opera, but they get to try on the role for size as young singers so that in time they're ready for the larger stages and they've sort of worked out all their chops and their acting and their singing. And so it's a wonderful forum for singers across the board. So we love having new people come out and audition for us.
Speaking of those singers, tell us a little bit about the cast for Tales of Hoffman.
The cast of Tales of Hoffman is stellar. We have Robert Vann as Hoffman. He's a very exciting tenor from Sacramento. He's done several roles with us. And then Shovik Mondal as the villains has come in from Baltimore to do the roles. And then we have Chelsea Hollow, who is Olympia the doll. And she will sing the highest note you will ever hear in an opera. She sings high A flat above C.
Wow.
So that is, you know, most sopranos sing a high C. The very high sopranos sing a high E flat. She goes E, F, G, A flat.
Wow.
So it will blow your mind when you hear it. Then we have Rabia Dunn as Julieta, Irina Newkirk as Antonia, and a whole supporting cast that is just wonderful, and Whitney Steele as the muse. They are each extraordinary in their own right.
We heard the very famous Barcarolle from Tales of Hoffman, and we should back up a step and perhaps give us a pocket synopsis of Tales of Hoffman for those who aren't
Hoffman
familiar.
Himself was a real person. Hoffman was the writer of all these fantastical stories, including The Nutcracker, that the ballet is based on. So he had this very disturbed imagination, and he wrote all these stories. And one of his big fears, and this particular production is being directed by Phil Lowery, who is a big fan of the original source material, the stories. And so he's imbued all the opera with them. But Hoffman himself had a terrible fear of automation. Automatons taking over the world. He had this vision of the future that automata were going to come and take all our jobs, and he had a nightmare that an automaton so lifelike would be made that he'd be tricked into falling in love with her. And so there's a whole story about that. So one of the stories is about Hoffman falling in love with a doll and then the doll coming to life. And then the second story is Hoffman meets a courtesan who steals men's shadows and then steals men's reflections. And so she steals the shadow of her last victim and she steals Hoffman's reflection.
What was he smoking, I wonder?
Right. And then in the third story, Hoffman falls in love with Antonia, an ardent opera singer who sings herself to death when the portrait of her mother comes to life and demands that she sing until she dies. It is a fantastical, bizarre journey, and the day glow costumes and strangeness abounds in this pocket opera performance, let me tell you.
Well, we're going to go out with just a little bit of an ensemble number from your most recent production of La Rondinet. Nicholas Garcia, Chung Wei Sung, thanks so much for coming in. We look forward to hearing more from Pocket Opera as the productions progress, and let's have you back again soon.
We do want to offer a discount for anyone who's listening to KALW.
Great.
Yes, as of tomorrow, Thursday, if you use the discount code KALWPOCKET, you'll get $10 off your ticket purchase. So we hope you'll come join us.
All right, thanks for that. And we'll see you again soon for your
Thank
next
you so much, David.
from the pocket opera production of La Rondine. They're doing Hoffman's Offenbach's The Tales of Hoffman this Sunday at the Hillside Club in Berkeley, next Sunday at the Legion of Honor here in San Francisco, and June 16th at the Oshman Family JCC in Palo Alto. More information at pocketopera.org. Still to come, I'll be talking with Christian Reif about his work with the San Francisco Symphony Youth Chorus, Youth Orchestra, as well as the full orchestra. But now some music that just has tugged at my heartstrings for, oh gosh, decades. To more of that tune without being able to speak these next few words about Beautiful, the Carol King musical. In September 2013, SHN presented the world premiere of Beautiful, the Carol King musical right here in San Francisco at the Orpheum. And the exhilarating production went on to become a Tony Award-winning hit on Broadway, won a Grammy as well. The triumphant return engagement here at the SHN Golden Gate Theater runs for just 2 weeks through June 9th. Based on the life of prolific musician Carol King, Beautiful follows her evolution from a 16-year-old composer to the multi-talented singer, songwriter, and pianist whose 1971 album Tapestry was the must-have soundtrack for a generation. Thank you to my sister Mary Jane, who introduced me to that album, and my own copy I wore out many times over. The album was listed on the Billboard 200 for 318 weeks between 1971 and 2011. 302 weeks consecutively and during that period, the longest by a female solo artist until Adele's 21 surpassed it in 2017. The show explores the relationships between Carole King and her lyricist husband, Jerry Goffin, and the married songwriters Cynthia Weil and Barry Mann, sort of the Fred and Ethel to their Lucy and Desi, as Cynthia Weil herself put it. And her music just frames the narrative. The foursome, both friends and competitors, were among the most successful writers to emerge from New York's Brill Building, the iconic hit factory of the 50s and 60s. As Tony and Academy Award nominee Douglas McGrath, who wrote the book, wrote, it's very hard to write a show about people who are still alive at this time. Jerry Goffin was still alive. He passed away in 2014. They all have their own memories, and he had to compress the stories, which is difficult. It was a 5-year period to develop the show from its inception to its opening in San Francisco. The show is, of course, propelled by Carole King's unforgettable tunes, including You've Got a Friend, It's Too Late, I Feel the Earth Move. And the story unfolds as King's marriage to Jerry Goffin falls apart in the aftermath of his infidelities, freeing her to launch her phenomenally successful solo career. Well, you know, when the world gives you lemons. Joining me in studio is the actress playing the character that also initially was skeptical of the prodigious talent that Carole King was early on, at least taking that talent as a primary occupation instead of something more steady like teaching, maybe. Suzanne Grodner is in studio. She plays Carole's mother, Jeannie, and has been with the Beautiful tour for more than 4 years. In addition to Beautiful, she's also been seen in Broadway productions of Bye Bye Birdie and The Rose Tattoo. Suzanne's from the Bay Area, having honed her craft in a lot of productions at TheaterWorks. Suzanne, welcome to Open Air.
It's such a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Boy, I understand that you spoke with Carole a bit about her mom as you were developing the character. What did you learn that's between the lines, so to speak?
Well, Carole and I had a chance to talk about Jeannie, and she gave me some insights to the what a complicated woman she was, and diverse. She was a playwright. She was a concert pianist. She was a director, and she was the one who really taught Carol about music at a very, very young age. Carol was at the piano when she was about 3 years old, and with her mother playing right by her side. And so her influence was huge to Carol's love for music. And she was also somebody who understood the realities of being a woman in the creative world. There weren't women who were songwriters or lyricists or composers, and Jeannie being a playwright and trying her success at that, saw the frustrations of being in a male-dominated creative world. And so at the top of the show, you see Jeannie being pulled in both directions, with Carol wanting to go out and become a songwriter, and Mom saying that just doesn't happen in this world that we live in. So she, and at the same time, she knows that Carol is talented and that she's got drive, and she sees a lot of herself in this young girl. And so in the end, she pushes her and says, go out there and try your luck, and I'm going to be right there supporting you, even though she has a lot of trepidation. Don Kirshner was one of those people who saw that there was a place for women. You know, he said that who better to write for kids than kids? Teenagers buy more records than anybody mm-hmm. in that time, and who better to write for them? So he took a chance with Carol. She came in and sang her song, and he said, "I'll take it." And it started from there. And after a while, she was given an office and met the people that, you know, you meet us.
Including people that Kirshner was fostering, like Jerry Goffin, where they mm-hmm. met, Neil Sedaka, Neil Diamond, mm-hmm. Paul Simon, a friend of Carol's who they enjoyed a friendship.
Yeah.
Phil Spector, Howard Greenfield, Barry Mann, Cynthia Weil as the other couple involved. Must have been a fascinating time at the Brill Building. Have you been to the Brill Building in New York?
I have. I mean, I've been the Brill and 1650 Broadway, where they were both kind of competing companies, and there was a lot of music going on back then. Mm-hmm. And what was good, what was nice, was that there was a place for everyone to create the music, whether it was Sinatra and Bennett and all of those adult driving musicians, and then there was a place for the young music of that day. Mm-hmm. So New York, is that whole area was kind of where it all happened.
Mm-hmm. So talking, and what a fertile place Brooklyn, New York was around that time too.
Just in
the James Madison High School alone,
right.
Bernie Sanders was in the class of 59. Carol was in the class of 58. The Notorious RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, from the class of 50.
Yeah.
Chuck Schumer in the class of 67. An amazing time. And in your character, it seems like it's almost a call from central casting. Give me a 1950s Brooklyn mom.
With a hair up to Jesus.
Give us a little of the character, would you?
Oh, Carol, do you remember when you used to play Mozart? I'd be so proud if you played Mozart again. So would your father. God rest his soul.
He's not dead yet.
He's dead to me.
I do remember that, Mom.
Yeah. He's just divorced, Mom. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'm really lucky. Mark Bruni asked me to do the tour. I was brought into the Broadway company the first year, and to fill in for the woman playing the role, and they I guess that was my audition, and they liked what they saw, and they, when the tour came up, they said, "Come on board," and I jumped at the chance, and I've been on the road for 4 years now. It's been great.
4 years.
Yeah.
That's just amazing.
Yeah.
And you're soon to end that tenure, I understand.
Yes. July 1st, I'm done. And on to new adventures. I'm not quite sure yet, but...
But based in New York.
Based
you've
in New York.
Got a great place to to work on things there, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Among the other amazing tunes in this show, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman, You've Got a Friend, mm-hmm. I Feel the Earth Move, The Locomotion, One Fine Day, So Far Away, just on and on. These tunes are just a part of our
right. Life. Well, you know, as you saw, the second half of the show is her creating a new sound and this idea of the Tapestry album where she wants to become a singer and sing her own music. But when we start off in the first act in the 50s, it goes from the 50s to when she does, you know, she creates the Tapestry album. And what a lot of the audience members don't realize is this huge canon of music that she wrote that people know so well. Many people come up to us after the show and said, I had no idea she wrote
Up
on the Roof and Locomotion, all of those, the iconic songs that were back in the Some Kind of Wonderful, mm-hmm. and drift songs with the Drifters and the Shirelles and Little Eva, who actually was their babysitter.
That's too
yeah,
much.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fun rivalry between Cynthia and Barry Mann.
They're still great friends too, by the way. They really were best friends, or still are best friends.
Quick shout out to your colleague and the titular figure involved in Beautiful, Sarah Bockel.
Sarah, my baby girl.
She's just amazing.
She is amazing, isn't she? And I've worked with all the Carols, and each one is so special and so unique. And Sarah Bockel does not disappoint. From the moment she steps out on stage, she's beautiful on stage and off. That's you know.
Dylan Wallach is Jerry Goffin, Alison Whitehurst, Cynthia Weil, mm-hmm. Jacob Heimer is Barry Mann, and James Clough as Don Kirshner.
Yes.
Let's go out with that incredible tune, Up on the Roof, by Carole King. Suzanne Grodner, we wish you a wonderful, let's call it a victory lap of sorts for the rest
you.
Of Beautiful,
it's been
which
great.
Runs through June 9th at the Golden Gate Theater, shnsf.com for more information. Thanks for coming in, Suzanne.
Thank you.
Tell you now, when I come home feeling tired and weedy, I go up where the air is fresh and sweet.
Up on the roof,
I get away from the hustling crowds and all that rat race noise down in the street.
Up on the roof,
at night the stars put on a show. And darling, you can share it all with me. I keep telling you right smack dab in the middle
Up
of
on the
town.
Roof, part of Beautiful, the Carole King musical, and the incredible living legacy that this wonderful composer is through June 9th at the Golden Gate Theater. Once again, shnsf.com for more information. Well, the very gifted, prolific conductor Christian Reif is enjoying a victory lap as well, which will include a European tour with the San Francisco Youth Symphony, and he'll be also conducting with the full San Francisco Symphony Orchestra and Chorus, Carmina Burana, next Tuesday. I caught up with him last week at Davie Symphony Hall. Christian Reif, welcome back to Open Air.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're on a victory lap of sorts, and in your last season with the San Francisco Youth Symphony, where you've been since the 2016-17 season, your work with the San Francisco Symphony as well as with the New World Symphony, suffice to say that MTT and San Francisco have a special place in your heart.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. From the time I met MTT, he's been so supportive and such a big part of my musical life and career, a big mentor, wonderful, yeah.
And let me offer you a bit of praise as well for your performances in December of John Adams' El Nino at the Cloisters in New York, superb performances.
Thank you.
And truly, I'm sure, a labor of love involving your now wife and the curator of special programs at the Met, Julia Bullock, wonderful soprano as well. And this was by special arrangement with John Adams.
Yes. So Julia approached John and asked if we could do an arrangement of El Nino, which is this beautiful nativity story. An oratorio usually it requires huge masses orchestra, six soloists, and choir, children's choir as well. So huge forces in the to put on a production of Venini. So it was wonderful to make the very intimate chamber version of it, and also pare down. It was about 50 minutes long, and it was beautiful for the cloisters up in Washington Heights.
And that beautiful chapel setting as well.
Oh, yeah. It was gorgeous. And a lot of fun, yeah, with lots of friends. And to work together with Julia was a treat.
Nice voice. And Mazel Tov, congratulations on your recent wedding.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Further celebration, I understand, this summer in Germany.
Yes, exactly. So last summer we did a civil ceremony in Santa Fe with two wonderful friends. And now this summer we're throwing a party and, you know, more church wedding celebrations with family and friends. Great. In Germany.
And you've got a very busy several weeks, months ahead here in San Francisco and beyond. Carmina Burana on Tuesday, the 4th of June at 8 p.m. with soloists Nikki Einfeld, Nicholas Vaughn, and the wonderful Hadley Adams. And, of course, the Grammy Award-winning San Francisco Symphony Chorus, as well as the Ragazzi Voice Chorus. This sounds like it's just going to be a grand lot of fun for you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's going to be a great time. And kind of my last hurrah with a symphony here as their resident conductor. So, I'm really, really looking forward to it. It should be fun. And working together with the friends, yeah, Nikki and Nick and Hadley, it's going to be great.
Have you had an opportunity to perform Carmina Burana in its entirety before?
I have not. This is my first time. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Uh-huh. In the great space of Davies Symphony Hall, of course. And now, moving on from there, already the San Francisco Youth Orchestra Tour kickoff concert here Sunday, the 16th of June at 8 p.m. What grand halls will you be taking this orchestra to?
It's a tour. It's a luxury tour. It's incredible. The venues we're performing in are some of the most revered and most historic and also most exciting halls in the world. So we're starting off in Copenhagen and Odense in Denmark, and then going to the new hall in Hamburg, the Elbphilharmonie, which just opened 2 years ago. It's probably the hottest venue in the world. And then Berlin Philharmonie. And then we go to Vienna to play in the Musikverein. And then finish off the tour in Budapest at the festival there.
Well, I'm sure you've enjoyed many guest conductor stints with orchestras around the world. There must be something special with having a group like the San Francisco Youth Symphony under your baton and having such always enthusiasm. No jaded musicians there yet.
that's true. Yeah, no, they're an incredible group of people, wonderful in their instruments, but it's just, it's so fulfilling to work with them and build their orchestral experience and their musical knowledge, and just to dive into this music that for many of them is the first time they've ever played these pieces. So we're taking Mahler's first symphony on tour, and I can still remember the first time I heard and played heard Mahler 1, and so this is my first time conducting it. I'm thrilled. Yeah, it's going to be fun, and also the soloists of the tour. Both Karen Gomio, she's performing here in June with us, the Bon Voyage concert, and in Copenhagen. And then Nikki Benedetti is soloing with us throughout the rest of the tour with Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto. And yeah, the San Francisco Symphony Youth Orchestra, they're very dear to my heart. And we've had some incredible experiences together and grown together as well. Wow. In these past 3 years.
You mentioned the magical feeling of experiencing Mahler for the first time. What is the reaction of this young generation of musicians to the music of Mahler?
Actually, surprisingly, the first reading of it, they dived right into it, and they explored it. I think for some of these emotions are rather new to them, like, and the wistfulness, as Michael often likes to talk about, us being a museum of endangered emotions. It's kind of the just exploring nature and walking through nature in our minds while we play this music. I think for many of them is a very new experience, especially if they grew up just in this inner city, and maybe not, you know, going out into the meadows and hearing cowbells. So it's been great because I did grow up in the, you know, close to the Alps, it's been great kind of infusing that knowledge and that that experience in the rehearsals with them. Mm-hmm.
And then experiencing, of course, MTT's work with the Mahler symphonies here.
Yes. Oh, they're magnificent. I mean, just recently now they played Mahler's Seventh Symphony, and it was a revelation. They were fantastic. And he is so good with this music, and the orchestras too. So they're really fueling each other and making some great things happen. So,
also on this touring program, work by Detlev Glanert. I don't know this composer, a German composer born in 1960, apparently a prolific opera composer, as well as chamber music and orchestral works, and you're doing a prelude number one from three American preludes. What exactly makes these American sounding?
Well, actually, I mean, the title, he says it's, he just chose that because he was commissioned by three American orchestras to write openers for their season, in the same season. So he thought, okay, let's make this a triptych. And I was there at the premiere, at the world premiere of the first American prelude. And it was in Tanglewood. I was conducting a different piece on the program. And he also describes it as being a symbiosis between some American-influenced rhythms and, you know, jazz style as well, and certain fanfares and marches sounding, then fusing that with the so-called old world traditions of Central Europe. Mm-hmm. So it's a fusion of some sorts, and it's a great opener, really fun. He's such a witty and such a intelligent composer. And he's going to be there for some of the rehearsals and concerts in Europe as well, so I'm excited.
Oh, fantastic. I look forward to exploring his music. So now tell us about your appointment in Germany, your native Germany, going back to.
Yes. So Julia and I, we're moving to Germany and to Munich in the summer, and basically just making Munich our base. And we wanted to be in Europe, being part of that European culture scene again, and I wanted to be closer to family as well. My parents live in Rosenheim, which is close to Munich, where I grew up, and my brother, who's an associate concertmaster of the Bavarian Radio Symphony Orchestra, he lives in Munich, and it has a great airport. So basically, we needed to be somewhere where we can quickly moved from one place to another to guest conduct, guest sing. So our work next season or the next few seasons is kind of 50-50 Europe and the States.
Well, speaking of guest conducting, one of your stints this year has also been with the Berklee Symphony. You conducted the May concert at Zellerbach Hall.
Yes, that was a lot of fun. I always enjoy making music with the Berklee Symphony, and it's been now the third time with them, and we had a really, really good time.
Well, we wish you the best in Germany. We know you'll be back and always welcome here.
Yes, no, I'm looking forward to being back in the Bay. I'm going to miss everyone here. So.
Christian Reif conducts Carmina Burana next Tuesday night at San Francisco's Davies Symphony Hall, the full orchestra and chorus under his baton. He has one more farewell tour before the youth orchestra goes off to their European tour. Music of Detlev Glanert, Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto, and selections from Mahler Symphony No. 1. That will be on the 16th of June at 8 p.m. He'll be back come July to start off the 10-day festival Napa Valley at the Meadowood in Napa. So we'll be hearing a lot more from great Christian Reif, and best of luck to him as he continues his stellar career. A little dance from Carmina Burana to wind things down on Open Air. My thanks to Neil Swinkels for producing the show. Our shows are archived at kalw.org as well. Thanks for listening.